Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for checking out this special Selection Sunday edition of the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. We know who's in. We've spent the year talking about Division I men's lacrosse here on the Inside Lacrosse Podcast, and I, tonight, am going to speak with Denver head coach Bill Tierney, Marquette head coach Joe Amplo, Yale head coach Andy Shea, about the NCAA tournament field that was unveiled on ESPNU this evening. We gauge the coaches' reactions to how their teams were treated by the selection committee, as well as what the matchups hold in store. And then, as a special treat, I appeared on Lacrosse Sports Network this evening and include the interview that I conducted, in which I'm asked about my thoughts on the job that the committee did. So make sure that you check back on Monday for the regularly scheduled edition of the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I'll be with my man, Dan Flynn. We'll be unpacking all of the 8 matchups set for this weekend, as well as reflecting on some of the NCAA conference championship action that got us to this point in terms of the tournament field. And we will be up to all of our, you know, usual shenanigans and nonsense as well. Hope you enjoy this one and all the reaction. If you like it, please tell a friend, subscribe, leave a rating and a comment on iTunes, and we will be back with more tomorrow. And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Denver head coach Bill Tierney, whose Denver Pioneers are the second seed in the NCAA tournament, revealed Sunday evening on ESPNU. And Coach T, I suppose first question is a very general one. What is your reaction to the Pio's place, your matchup, and how the NCAA committee treated your team?
Well, you know, anybody who's been around, Terry, knows that we play so few games in the sport of Division I men's lacrosse, so that whether you play somebody in February or you play them yesterday, it's all the same. So with that in mind, you know, last night when we were very disappointed about our loss to Marquette, you know, we were pretty distraught about where we might end up. But once we took a step back and looked at our body of work and realized what a great schedule we played, some of the great teams that we were able to go on the road and defeat, you know, we felt like we had a shot at being a 2 or 3 spot.
One of the things that's still unique about the 18-team NCAA tournament field is the presence of this playing game and the fact that your opponent will have played only 3 days prior. What do you make of that, and how do you feel like it's still feeling its way out in terms of setting the competitive advantage? Obviously, we saw Bryant upset Syracuse on the heels of playing in a playing game, so certainly not impossible to win after playing a midweek game. But what's your reaction to the phenomenon of playing a playing game in general?
Well, my take is always a little bit different from others because I've been around a lot longer than others, is that if we didn't have these and we didn't have, some people complain about AQs for weaker leagues and all that stuff, if we didn't have AQs and we didn't have the playoff, the play-in games, by the NCAA formula, which is a tournament for 1 every 8 teams, we would have 8 teams in our tournament. And so, the alternative is an ugly one. But because of the success of the tournament over the years, because of, the popularity, the TV, the money, the interest in the game, I think that, we've got to take the good with the bad, and it's certainly unfortunate. We'd all love to have 24 teams or whatever it might be. But like anything else, you're going to have the one that gets left out is always going to be the most disappointed. And, if you look at it in one way, you can say, oh, it's terrible for these teams. But if you look at it another way, the alternative is you don't have AQs and only the top 8 or 10 teams get in. And that's just not great for the game.
As a coach and as a man who has to prepare his team for a short turnaround, not knowing who your opponent is going to be until Wednesday night, what is your approach for Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday as you guys prepare to find out whether you'll be taking on Towson or Hobart?
Well, first of all, we lost a game yesterday, and whenever you lose a game, it gives you the need to look inside yourself and see, when we were on the run, the 6-game run or the you know, earlier in the season, a 20-game run. You know, are you really looking inside yourself? Are you really contemplating about the things that you don't do well? And I think when you lose, like we did against Penn State and now like we did against Marquette, it allows you an opportunity to take a realistic step back and say, if we need to change something, we'll change it. Because, you know, sometimes you're on those winning streaks, you don't want to change anything, even though you think something may be wrong. And this gives you a chance to really, you know, really think about what the things you do well and the things you don't. And I also think for the guys, especially after losing a tough game like yesterday, it allows them to kind of, you know, press the reset button and get going again. It's a 4-game season now. Well, you go home. There's nothing in between. And certainly feel blessed and fortunate to be a part of it.
Is there anything top of mind right now that you might consider changing based on the way that your team's played over the recent weeks?
Well, you know, we've got to look at film from yesterday. We haven't had a chance to do that yet. And we've got to see, you know, what was successful for Marquette. Our opponents aren't strangers to the game. Everybody in lacrosse is a bit of a thief, and they're going to look at what the other teams do to be successful against you. So we've got to examine those things as if we were scouting Denver, and we've got to see what other people might see, and we've got to correct them.
And finally, Coach T, we'll get you out on this one. And it's just once again, you know, we really appreciate your perspective, both in terms of, you know, having been so close to the game for so long, and then also by being a part of so many of the things that have moved the game forward. You know, as you take a kind of overarching perspective on this bracket in terms of, you know, folks have made a comment about how westward it leans in terms of Air Force and Notre Dame and Marquette having a presence alongside Denver, but then also, you know, with respect to some of the upsets in the conference tournaments, particularly Hartford and Hobart upsetting, you know, the top seeds in their conference tournament. Is there anything that you make of how this field came together that you think is particularly unique or pertinent, or is there anything that strikes you when you analyze the whole field?
Well, I think from a smile on my face type lacrosse ambassador, you know, you look at it and you say, wow, this is good things are happening. Why are they happening? Because there's only 70 Division I teams. There's so many more players now than there were 10, 15 years ago that can play at this level. You know, I was in awe watching some of these games this weekend and just seeing all the great players that are on all these teams. And the coaching has gotten so much better. The technology is better. It's kind of, you know, from my perspective, not mainstream enough yet. But, you know, we're getting there. And when you see these kinds of things, you know, you feel good about it from the overall perspective. You know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, we've talked about this before. We'll see what happens when this thing starts getting narrowed down. We'll see who ends up in the Final Four. If it continues to surprise, then maybe we've really crossed the path. But even if it doesn't, this has been an amazing season and a lot of, you know, a lot of things happening. And then finally, from a personal perspective, you know, I'm gonna play on Sunday against one of my ex assistant coaches in Greg Raymond or Sean Nadelin, and each of those spent three wonderful years with me at Princeton, and I love them both dearly. I'm proud of those guys to have come right out of Hopkins and been under my tutelage as 22-year-olds, both of them, and now seeing them as really successful head coaches makes me proud. A little worried and a little scared about the student versus the teacher game that's coming up on Sunday. Don't know which one yet, but I couldn't be more proud of those guys and more in awe of what they've done in each of their programs.
Well, Coach T, we really appreciate your time on Selection Sunday evening. Understand obviously the sense of pressing the reset button after a Big East championship loss, but certainly the number 2 seed is a fine tip of the cap from a tremendous body of work that has been developed over a really nice season as you guys have defended an NCAA championship. So best of luck as you continue to prepare for either Hobart or Towson, and we look forward to seeing you play on Sunday.
Thanks, Terry.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Yale head coach Andy Shea, whose Bulldogs won yet another Ivy League championship with a pulling away victory 14-9 over Harvard on Sunday. And You know, Coach, this is obviously a really interesting season as you guys got off to such a hot start, made it all the way to number one in the polls, had a few setbacks, both in terms of a couple unfortunate results as well as a couple of unfortunate injuries. To be able to rebound, regroup, and be in this position heading into the NCAA tournament, how gratifying is it as you look up and down your roster?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, you like you said, we've had some injuries. You know, three guys that you would pencil into starters over the course of our year with long sticks in their hand. You know, a pole who's in our, you know, top two rotation and two close defensemen that start. You know, it's you just look at the guys, we juggle some guys around, we move their starting pole down low and bump a few guys up to first time duty at pole. And, you know, the very fact that our defense still, you know, hold water, it's pretty, they're doing an incredible job with low numbers and you know, a lot of guys learn new positions. So I'm just really proud of the guys, the way they've fought through it. You know, we as coaches, I think we're a little nervous that we'd be, you know, a lot different, and we might not be as you know, deep right now, but I think we're every bit as gritty, and the kids prove it, you know, when they go out there. So it's been great. I'm very proud.
What were the keys to the pair of wins over Penn and Harvard in the Ivy League tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for us, you know, the Penn game was a time of possession thing. We felt like they had the ball a ton. We just kind of had to grind it out. It was driving, pouring rain. So you know, we realized that goals were going to be at a premium. You know, we didn't clear the ball especially well. I think that part of that had to do with their 10-man and the pouring rain. We couldn't make the 80-yard passes or even the 20-yard passes when push came to shove. So, but we knew we were going to have to grind it out and end up being a tight, you know, low-scoring affair. And, you know, the guys chose to play like that, I guess. And then, you know, with Harvard, we knew they wanted to run. So we knew that you know, we could play that way as well. So, you know, amazingly, you know, in playing in these Sunday games, these Ivy League games, I always felt like they're very slow affairs because both teams are exhausted. And, you know, at least I felt like our guys could have played another game today. It was really incredible the way they, the energy they had and just the pop they had in their legs for the whole game. I was impressed. So.
How much do you know about Navy?
I know very little. You know, I know they're very good facing off. They're very good in the goal. They're very good defensively. You know, and they've had a great year. So, you know, we don't cross over with them that much. And, you know, we're trying to figure out right now what we're looking at.
And how does the process go over the course of the week in terms of, you know, shifting your focus from obviously the recovery phase, making sure that your players' bodies are right, moving into Monday, and all of a sudden here it is, you have, you know, your season on the line, only 5 days away.
Well, I think we've got the Sunday game, so we feel like we're going to have we've got time to recover here, and you know, we just, our guys do a really good job of you know, keeping their nutrition up and keeping their hydration up, and kind of, you know, we do a really good job of making sure their legs are fresh, and we've done that all year. So really nothing changes. It's just another week.
And then lastly, to get you out on this one, I mean, you and I have spoken over the course of probably the last 5 or so years as your program has gone from, you know, one with aspirations of making the NCAA tournament to now, you know, one that has been there so consistently, it's almost as if you can set your watch to Yale peaking this time of year. Is there anything from a big picture perspective that you have learned over your program's repeated trips through the Ivy League tournament as well as now into the NCAA tournament that you think you're going to apply over the course of the next week or, you know, certainly all things go your way over the next 2 or 3 weeks that will be different from years past? Is there anything that you've learned or experienced that you think will make this week unique in comparison to previous trips to the NCAA tournament?
No, you know, it's funny. I think that our goal is to be in this position again and hope that we can, you know, make the right steps to succeed and win a few more games. So I think that if we have learned, then we'll know in the next couple weeks. But you know, it's been a frustrating few years, kind of getting up to the NCAAs and the quarterfinals and you know, hoping to break through one more weekend or even further. I guess one more weekend after the quarterfinals, but we're gonna, all that we've done is really kind of reassess our goals a little bit, and our goals, are to go a little bit further if we can. So, but we do realize that starts with beating a very good Navy team if possible.
Well, Andy Shea, we really appreciate your time. Congratulations again on an Ivy League championship and a trip to the NCAA tournament. Good luck against the Midshipmen, and we'll all be watching this weekend.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Marquette head coach Joe Amplo, who I have to imagine is incredibly gratified on a Sunday evening as his Golden Eagles are Big East champions and the number 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. Coach Amplo, how do you describe the wild ride that you and your program has been on over the last 4 days?
Fun, real fun. That's probably the first word that comes to my mind, but somewhat surreal. Truly just on cloud nine, and just it's been a fun ride the past few days, and really enjoyed seeing the excitement on our kids' faces.
At the beginning of the season, you and I spoke, and you talked about how much this senior class, who had been with you for so long and helped to do so much to build this program to the place that it was going to have to take ownership of a group of players whose identity had to change over time. So, to go from a team that wanted to know how it was going to play at all to a team that was going to have to figure out how to handle success to now being a team that was able to beat the defending national champions and host an NCAA tournament first-round matchup. How do you trace that trajectory as you look at it from a big picture perspective?
It's amazing. It really is. And these guys, these seniors, this team, they never cease to amaze me by the challenges that they can overcome. I was walking out of Denver actually on Saturday afternoon after the game, and it was quiet. The guys had left the locker room, and I walked past the locker room we dressed in the first year we played out there. And I was hit with a memory of me sitting in that room talking to a team of young kids, freshmen, who had just lost a game by, 19 goals, and trying to convince them that this is part of the process. One day it's all going to work out. And it was so gratifying, satisfying for me just to remember that moment and to walk out of there, finally getting to the spot where we could beat that team. And it was the same kids. They just grew up and bought in. So I can't think of a better feeling I'll ever have as a coach than that one right there.
Is there a way that you can bottle that, the ability to channel doubt and turn it into, or external doubt and turn it into internal belief, and the ability to overcome challenges that people outside of your program think might be beyond your reach?
Honestly, Terry, I think I'm just so lucky to be blessed with so many good kids in that group that just bought into the process, and it's truly on them. They've taken ownership of it, and they've empowered themselves to really lead this team and overcome those obstacles. It was just they said to themselves, not externally, but more internally, probably to each other, that we're not going to let anything beat us, and we're going to see where that takes us. And it's been fun to watch. It really has.
Shifting gears a little bit, you had a dual role this weekend, because once you finished coaching, then you had to turn your attention to your responsibilities as a member of the NCAA selection committee. What was that process like? I saw that you were in video conference with the folks in Indianapolis. What was it like to go from coaching to consulting?
It really didn't give me a chance to kind of come down from my high. I was focused on the selection process, and I really didn't get a chance to just think about what just happened. As soon as the game was over, I was so concerned about getting on my plane to get to a spot where I can take the calls. And then I was on a call all day today. So it really hasn't sunk in that we've beaten Denver and we're going to the NCAA tournament. Now it's starting to kind of be real to me. But the process was exciting. It's the first year I've been on the committee, and just really understanding or seeing how the process works and how much detail goes into each selection and each seed. I mean, it's really drilled down to the you know, 10,000th, 1,000,000th degree. So much thought goes into each decision that's made, so that all of us come to an agreement that that bracket is the best that we can put forth based on the criteria. And I feel really good about it. I felt good about it as it was announced. And I think it's going to be a great tournament. There's a number of teams that can compete.
There's no question that it's going to be a great tournament. And I think you look up and down the bracket, there is not a first-round matchup that is not interesting or not won't be compelling to watch. But I want to let you go on this question. Yesterday, the Fox Sports broadcast captured a moment as the clock wound down where, you know, and I hate to do this, project body language expert Bill Simmons style, but to me, it looked like your facial expression was one of a guy who was processing the fact that you had achieved this really momentous accomplishment. I know that shifting gears, as a member of the selection committee whose team is in consideration, you recuse yourself when they talk about Marquette. So when you rejoin the conversation and you find out that you are going to be hosting a first-round game, and then eventually you find out that you're going to be hosting North Carolina, what's the metaphorical kind of that image of that you know, I thought the broadcast captured really nicely of the fact that you had accomplished this taking in. What's the metaphor of realizing, wow, we Marquette, 4 years into our existence, are hosting, you know, one of the traditional powers in all of college across?
It's a combination of disbelief and joy. I mean, I was honestly just so happy. And then just disbelief, like, wow, what just happened? We just beat Denver, and now we're going to host a game and play one of the Giants' top sport. And I'm not saying that because it's not deserving, because I do believe that when you look at the numbers as critically as we did in that room today, you know, we're right in that range. But it's just like 5 years ago, there wasn't even a lacrosse stick on this campus. And now I'm walking out of a room with 200 people and the president of our university standing next to me watching our team get announced as the number 6 seed in the tournament. It's just disbelief. And it just brings so much joy to my heart, knowing that all the people that we walked together on this journey with have enjoyed it as much as I have.
Well, there's really nothing else to say besides congratulations on a job well done, both in terms of you know, guiding a fourth-year program to the NCAA tournament and successfully putting together an 18-team field that, while it contains some surprises, you know, I'm interested in hearing Mr. Doris's justification and parsing out some of those decisions. I think, by and large, represents what the kind of cumulative thought was in terms of what this NCAA tournament field should look like.
Well, I appreciate that, Terry, on both comments, and always nice to talk to you.
Welcome back to this special edition of Lacrosse Now. I'm Courtney Cox, and to continue the talk of the selections for the NCAA tournament, I've got a special treat. Terry Foy from Inside Lacrosse joins me now. Terry, thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely, Courtney. Thanks for having me.
First of all, any surprises or snubs in your mind?
Well, I don't think there's really any snubs in this field, because ultimately I think that there were 7 teams that had a fair argument for 4 spots, and it ended up being that those spots went to Navy, Johns Hopkins, North Carolina, and I mean, I guess, you know, from that point it looks like you know, maybe Duke kind of slipping down a little bit ends up in that pool of teams. But, you know, I think ultimately whether it's Rutgers or Bryant, the team that was left out, the team that was snubbed, you know, ultimately it wasn't as if it was super undeserving. You know, Harvard, for example, was 8-8. Is that a team that, you know, really has a strong gripe about not being included in the NCAA tournament field? There are, however, a fair number of surprises. The one that surprised me most, first and foremost, was the fact that Air Force was not in the playing game, and that playing game that was shuttled to Denver didn't feature them. I know that that's by rule. It goes to the 4 lowest rated RPI teams, but I was under the impression that that included the Falcons based on the numbers that we had run and posted on Inside Lacrosse today. I think aside from that, the next biggest surprise would be Duke not getting a top 8 seed. And being on the road in the first round, traveling to Loyola. I know that some people are surprised by Marquette being seeded 6th. I'm not. I had them projected at 7. So, you know, the only surprise to me is that they were not behind Duke. You know, I thought that based on that 16-1 result from 2 or 3 weeks ago, that the Blue Devils would be slated 6th and Marquette would be slated 7th. But, you know, to me, that's parsing hairs a little bit or splitting hairs a little bit, and wasn't super surprised by that.
So you bring up Marquette, a sixth seed. Many people thought they were a bubble team. Do you think they would have been in? Do you think they would have been a sixth seed if they didn't upset Denver?
Yes. At the end of last week, I said that I thought the winner of the Marquette-Villanova game was going to be the last team in. Ultimately, based on the way that everything unfolded, because of the fact that you could argue Hartford stole a bid and Albany was going to get in, that you know that could have been the bid that cost Marquette a spot if they did not win the automatic qualifier. But I do think that it would have shaken out, whether it was, you know, on the bubble side by side with Johns Hopkins, North Carolina, or Albany, three other teams that got in, Navy also. I think Marquette would have been, with a win over Villanova and a loss to Denver, would have gotten a spot in the tournament from that group of five.
And Duke and Loyola, a rematch, a great first rounder here. 15-6 Duke the first time around. What do we see happening in the rematch?
Well, you know, I think that it would be unfair to expect anything other than a great game because, you know, as they highlighted on the ESPNU broadcast, Loyola has been great first round games have been a hallmark of Loyola's program since 2008, with, you know, the lone exception being their loss to Albany in 2014. I think that seeing a different team that you saw early in the season is really likely from Loyola. Offensively, it's interesting to me how they have improved their efficiency and their overall quality without changing that much dramatically. It just feels like the biggest change has been to put more in the hands of attackman Pat Spencer. And I think that it'll be very interesting to see how Duke tries to match up with them defensively. And at the other end of the field, I think that Loyola is playing a little bit better, a little bit more confidently defensively in front of Jacob Stover, a goalie who started midway through the season, joined started being the full-time starter midway through the season, and has been over 60% as a keeper ever since.
So as we know, anything can happen in this sport, especially this season, a crazy season in 2016. Any favorite dark horse headed into the tournament?
Well, I think that, you know, we're in a position where really any team that is outside of the playing game, and even then, Towson kind of feels like a team that could potentially win a game, as, you know, the Tigers, I think, match up really interestingly with Denver. But at this point, no, I think that, you know, I have said over the course of the last month and a half that my final four picks were Notre Dame, Denver, Maryland, and then the winner of Yale, Brown. And I said that not knowing that that was going to be the projected quarterfinal matchup. So I think as it relates to dark horses getting to the final four, I would say no. As it relates to first round tournament upsets, I mean, there isn't one that rises above the others. Do I think North Carolina is more likely to be Marquette than Johns Hopkins is to be Brown? Not necessarily. So I think at this point, you know, as it relates to dark horses, you know, I'm gonna take a pass on that one because there isn't one that really jumps out.
Okay, you can take a pass there. But who's your most intriguing matchup in the first round?
I think that the most exciting game is going to be Brown versus Johns Hopkins. I think that it's an offensive slugfest that, you know, will be projected to have an over-under in the realm of 32, 33 goals, maybe even a little bit reminiscent of the AmeriCase Championship game between Hartford and Vermont that we saw on Saturday morning, where it felt like both teams were able to score at will. And it's not because either team plays necessarily bad defense. I think it has more to do with the fact that they are both so efficient and effective offensively. I think the biggest thing that I'm going to be interested to see is Johns Hopkins is, while they're very skilled, not overly athletic offensively. Brown is a defense that's able to pressure really well. And I think that what I'm going to be interested to see is, you know, when they let their athletes like Alec Tullett and Larkin Kapp get out on the edge, you know, how do guys like Shaq Stanwyck and Ryan Brown handle that pressure? Does it create seams? Because oftentimes that's what happens. If defenses pressure out and you're able to utilize your skill to get behind the defense, that creates high-quality scoring opportunities. I feel like that's the way that Johns Hopkins is going to score against Brown, and it's the way that they'll be able to keep it close, because I don't see the Hopkins D being able to keep Brown under, say, 14 goals.
A very exciting couple of weeks ahead of us. I know you're excited. We're all excited here. Terry, so great to have you on. Always such a pleasure to talk with you.
For sure. Thank you for having me as well.